Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. It is a beautiful September day or evening, and you are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. We've got a double feature for you this week. Neil Young's song, Harvest Moon, is here to help us celebrate our own Harvest Moon here in the Gallatin Valley, making an appearance September 17th, which is Tuesday this week. And at 8:44 p.m. that night, we should be seeing the peak of a partial lunar eclipse, so let's hope for clear skies. Our show this week begins with a Desert Oracle Radio episode from September 14th, 2019, that Ken Lane calls Beneath This September Moon. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the Mojave Desert, and it sure is a pretty night out there. Under the full moon. Well, it has been a weird summer, and now we are back on the radio. Welcome to the third season of Desert Oracle Radio. It might be the last season, too, because we probably aren't really going to have seasons any longer. Now, I was up in Elko a couple of years ago in January at the Cowboy Poetry thing. Very exciting. And that Great Basin chill just gets in your bones. And the woman at the Western Wear store tells me, we've only got two seasons here. Too damn cold and too damn hot. We don't want to get too precious about these things. Let's just do the show every week. Maybe take a two-week unpaid vacation every couple of years if we live that long. The American dream. So we come down to the station here in Joshua Tree and do the show live now. Live and crackling through a radio, as radio should be, a live broadcast in the beautiful darkness. You want to hear something poetic? Here's something poetic. The radio's on, feeling all right, cruising the strip on a Saturday night. Those lyrics were by David Berman, who left this world over the summer. And it turns out that David Berman was here in Joshua Tree for a while, working on what would be his last record. Purple Mountain, it's called. It's good, but it's a little bit hard to listen to. Radio's on, feeling all right. That line I quoted is from a song called Honk If You're Lonely. That was by David Berman's band called the Silver Jews. It came out a little over 20 years ago, I believe, on the album called American Water. It was sort of a fake country song, or a real country song, I guess. Because in the 90s, there was this inexplicable fad. There were these terrible bumper stickers that encouraged other drivers to honk their car horns if they approved of your message. So if you like the Oakland Raiders or Pomeranians or Jesus or Leonard Skinner or Mescaline or Furbies or Transcendental Meditation, whatever the sticker said, whatever you liked enough to share with the wider world, well, people would just pound on their car horns if they also liked this thing. I guess until the bumper sticker was out of sight. Who would do that? Eventually, people got too scared to put that kind of bumper sticker on their cars because of road rage. Plus, bumper stickers are pretty dumb. You want to lay low, right? Don't advertise anything without knowing the demographic. And out on the interstate, the demographic is a great big question mark. You never know if the person behind you is crazy. I mean real crazy, the killing kind. They might jump out at the stoplight by the saloon and might have a sledgehammer or probably 6 or 7 guns. And what are you going to do about it? You can't just drive away because you're blocked by a couple of rental RVs that are covered in giant wraparound decals of Joshua Tree National Park landscapes, which look especially weird when the RV is within that actual landscape. Honk if you love Joshua Tree. Go ahead if you're feeling weird out there on the road tonight. Friendly toot of the horn, but do be careful. Sometimes out on Highway 62 in the middle of a hot day, you'll see some guy walking down the shoulder of the road with a guitar around his neck. And you know when you see somebody like that, you just cross the street or slip into an alley or whatever's available, jump in an RV that's waiting at the stoplight. Nobody who really knows how to play the guitar is walking around Joshua Tree with a guitar hanging off their neck. You know this in your heart. Nobody even has to tell you. Well, that David Berman song was called Honk If You're Lonely. That's a classic of a sort. And this program is on Friday nights, not Saturday nights. It's been Friday nights since 2017. It's a good time to be listening to the radio when you're cruising Highway 62 under a full moon. And now we got the whole hour, 10 to 11 p.m. The nearly witching hour, as they call it. Now, you look at the news and you see a lot about phones and podcasts and Wi-Fi, but radio is a fantastic thing because these radio waves come from a mountaintop between here and 29 Palms. You can see the towers up there with the red light. And whether you're listening on your car radio or your portable radio out by the fire ring or on your phone, you are listening to radio waves converted back to sound, which is actual magic. It's an imperfect conversion with the signal picking up a little noise and static here and there, depending on where you are, which part of the high desert, whether you've got a hill between you and the broadcast towers, whether there's an electrical storm or a dust storm, whether some rats got up under the dash and chewed up the wires and caused a lot of trouble. Expensive damage. I like our native rats and ground squirrels and etc. as much as anybody, but you should always set a few gopher snakes loose under the hood every night just to be safe. About 25 years ago, in fact, almost exactly 25 years ago, something changed in the Mojave Desert. It was something that had been brewing for quite a while, since the late 1980s, but it took until 1994 for the California Desert Protection Act to become law. And if congressional bills don't sound all that exciting, this one was, because it had a real impact in the high desert. We're about to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the California Desert Protection Act. This is what made Death Valley National Monument and Joshua Tree National Monument into what they are today, beloved national parks. And it created the beloved and mysterious and seldom visited Mojave National Preserve. They really put everything in place for the permanent protection of the Great Mojave Wilderness, now protected forever. This is now the second largest protected desert wilderness on planet Earth. From Sand to Snow National Monument, through Joshua Tree National Park, up to Mojave Trails National Monument, Amboy Crater, Historic Route 66, Mojave National Preserve, Death Valley National Park, all the way up into the Eastern Sierra and into the state of Nevada. On Saturday, October 5, just a few weekends from tonight, Desert Oracle Radio will be presenting a special edition of Campfire Stories at Amboy Crater and Mojave Trails National Monument. Campfire Stories with me, your host, Ken Lane, along with an Instagram meetup, whatever that is, followed by a star party with telescopes and somebody telling you which constellation is which, trying to keep you from freaking out about the massive silent black triangle hovering over the haunted parking lot. It's going to be a lot of fun and probably pretty weird. And who knows, you just might get lucky. So come on out. The festivities start at 5 p.m. on Saturday, October 5. And it's just about an hour beyond 29 Palms. Just take Amboy Road through Wonder Valley, stop at the Palms for a few hours, and then follow the blacktop and then turn left at the railroad tracks. A lot of people screw up here. They go right instead of left. You can see Amboy Crater rising up over the desert floor. That's the way you want to go. Now you can go to desertoracle.com and click events. October is already the most action-packed month we've had, including a secret performance coming up on October 19 in Joshua Tree. You have to message us on Instagram or something, and I'll tell you about it. I can't mention it on the radio. And on Halloween night, Thursday, October 31st, we are kicking off a new season of Campfire Stories at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. 7 p.m. free and open to all at the Fire Ring in the Commune Grotto. We did this last year and I loved it because you can sit out under the stars and get a drink from the bar, stretch out on the lawn or the sofas they've got everywhere. Pumpkins all carved up into terrible things. It's just magical. And then we keep going with that. Once a month, always on Thursdays, including the day after Christmas and the day after New Year's, when all the amateurs are out of the way. You're listening to Desert Oracle Radio. Give us a call with your weird stories. are now 7 days away from Raid Area 51. The electronic dance music portion has been relocated to the Las Vegas Convention Center. A pair of Dutch YouTubers became the first to be arrested for trying to get into Area 51 and see them aliens. For many years, the fencing around Area 51, the Groom Lake Complex, had signs about every 100 yards or so that said use of deadly force was authorized by the U.S. government should anyone attempt to intrude. Lately, the signs have been replaced by kinder, gentler signs warning of $1,000 fines and possibility of jail time. What Area 51 truly is part of Edwards Air Force Base. It forms the eastern end of the supersonic corridor over the Mojave Desert. Naval Weapons Station sits in the middle, and millions of acres of Bureau of Land Management and other federal land connects these far-flung desert bases so that stealth bombers and new Skunk Works planes don't crash into suburbs. But in 1989, a strange new story came out of Las Vegas from a television reporter named George Knapp and a witness who initially appeared with his voice distorted and his features darkened, who claimed that he had worked on one part of the Groom Lake complex called S4, and that he was a physicist. And his job, part of a very small team, was backwards engineering flying saucers that had crashed on Earth. Try this one more time. Desert Oracle Radio, you're on the air.
Hi, Ken. I've got a story about some strange lights outside of the desert of in Coolidge, Arizona.
Coolidge, Arizona. Now, is that south of Phoenix?
That's right. Yeah, it's about halfway between Phoenix and Tucson.
Tell us a little bit about Coolidge. Is that a big town?
No, Coolidge is a small rural farming community. When I was growing up there in the 90s and early 2000s, the population was maybe about 7,000 people altogether.
Now tell us about these lights.
Well, you know, there are some areas outside of Coolidge, like Eloy comes to mind, where I know some testing out there. flares in the sky wasn't something that was uncommon to see in the area. But there was a span for about 6 weeks or so where, every few days as the sun was setting, there were these series of lights that would pop up into the sky, typically 4 to 5 of them at a time. And unlike flares hanging in the air, these lights would shift and disappear and show up in another place or move from a completely horizontal configuration to, let's say, a 45-degree configuration, with them all being in straight lines, and then sometimes them just shooting straight up or straight out away from each other at speed that I just don't think is at least natural to what we understand here on Earth.
Did you see any kind of structure or shape connecting these lights?
They were so far from us, and if I had to guess, I would say probably 15 to 20 miles away from where we would view them. But they did give off a sense by looking at the way that the colors of light shifted, almost as if they were spinning and there were different colors about the orb. But never able to see an actual craft of any type.
So if these were 15 or 20 miles away, how large do you think the lights were for you to be able to see them at that distance?
I mean, they would have had to have been fairly substantial. You know, I would imagine at least the size of a large aircraft, if not larger. They were certainly large enough for us to certainly stand out from the first time that we ever saw them. But certainly nothing of that we know of on Earth.
How often did you see these lights, and did you have anyone with you?
Yeah, so it was about a group of 5 or 6 of us. We were in our early 20s, renting out an old abandoned doctor's office in Arizona, sitting on top of a 2-story roof. And one evening when we saw it for the first time, and it stopped us in our tracks. And you know, like you said, the span that this happened was probably about 6 weeks or so, and it didn't happen every night, maybe every 3 or 4 nights. And then eventually, we made it our kind of ritual to go out every evening to see what was happening with the lights. And it got to a point where they just stopped appearing. Very strange.
Well, stay with us for just a minute. We're going to do a short break, and I want to ask you what, if anything, these might have to do with the Phoenix lights. We'll be right back. We're back on Desert Oracle Radio, and on the line we have a gentleman from Coolidge, Arizona, who has been seeing, along with a number of college friends. What year was this? Can I ask that you were seeing these strange lights?
This would have been, this would have been 2004, the fall of 2004.
All right, 2004, that's, so that was about 7 years after the famous Phoenix lights. Did you ever see those?
That's right. I am fairly familiar with the Phoenix lights. I unfortunately did not get to see them firsthand, but certainly with the media coverage, especially with Fife Symington and his big reveal of the quote unquote alien that he had found. You know, it definitely lays in the lore of Arizona history for sure.
After thinking about these lights, and I suppose discussing them with your housemates there, what do you think you saw?
Well, Ken, you know, one thing that I haven't spoken about was one of the people that were viewing these lights with me was my girlfriend at the time, now wife. She lived about half an hour away from Coolidge in a small town called Arizona City. And one night after us viewing these lights, she was driving home and had, I would say, an experience that is similar to what a lot of people have described of the Phoenix lights, with an actual formation passing overhead. She saw similar lights after us viewing lights that evening. You know, she was driving down, you know, as you can imagine, in these smaller farming communities, very rural roads. So she was driving down a two-lane road between Coolidge and Arizona City, you know, no lights to speak of, no street lights. So as you can imagine, it's very dark out there, and all you really have is the light of the moon. But she saw an actual formation of a total of five lights. So it was almost in what she would describe as a pyramid formation, with three lights being at the bottom, two lights being towards the top of the pyramid, basically a pyramid without the top on it. And those lights actually came towards her from a distance of, she's guessing, maybe about a mile or so, and then hovered above her as she was driving, above her car as she was driving about 60 miles an hour, and then a bright light shining straight down on top of her car. And she was so shaken by it, she actually called me on the phone while this was happening. And ultimately, after maybe a mile or so, it sped off in front of her and then shot up into the sky.
Incredible. So a spotlight from the craft onto the car. About how high above the car did she think it was?
She estimates that it was maybe 50 feet above her at most.
I would say 30 to 50 feet.
That sounds terrifying.
So, I still remember the phone call, getting that phone call, and she was absolutely terrified.
Did she have any other experience with these craft or lights afterwards, or was this the end of the lights over the house?
Well, you know, I'm trying to recollect now. It's been a few years, but I think we had seen the lights a few more times after that. But I do believe that her experience was towards the end of our, 5 to 6 week experience with these lights.
Have either of you seen anything strange since then?
No, I can't. Oh, yeah. Actually, my wife is nodding her head. Yes, she has. The lights in between San Diego and Tucson on off of the 8, off of I-8. Although I don't know if those could be attributed to military flares, but. Yeah, but no, nothing that extreme, Ken, for sure.
That is a wild story. I would love to hear more about that one. Unfortunately, we're almost at the end of our hour tonight. But, you know, we are going to do a special in a couple of weeks on mass sightings. And considering all that has happened in Arizona, Phoenix, and also down by the Goldwater bombing range, where there have been some incredibly strange reports that are definitely not flares. If you're around, we'd be happy to have you come back and tell us a little more about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking my call, Kim.
Oh, thanks very much. 30 feet.
Yes, I know.
Hundreds of these reports every year. Look at the National UFO Reporting Center website, newfork.org. And look at any southwestern state. It's kind of absurd. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. We broadcast from Joshua Tree and on fine community radio stations on the West Coast through PRX, Public Radio Exchange. Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Thanks to Cody Joseph for coming in late on a Friday and helping us figure out the system. Get the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Try telling Spotify, play Desert Oracle Radio. It'll do it. Same with Pandora, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. We've got 3 years of programs awaiting your ears. Please enjoy responsibly. Our guest in the studio next week is Terry Taylor Castillo, and we're going to get right into the angels, because Terry Taylor happens to be the best-selling author, Terry Lynn Taylor, and we're going to talk about angel consciousness, which is wild stuff. You know, there's been a lot of time on this particular form of the spiritualist work. Dear old Aleister Crowley. There's a lot to it, is what I'm saying. We'll be back next week, Friday, 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. You can stream the show from z107.7fm.com, from their app, or from the TuneIn app. And we'll try to get the podcast up over the weekend, Monday at the latest. If you have something you want to put in the mail for us, it's P.O. Box 1735, Joshua Tree, California, 92252. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Our next half hour is an episode of Desert Oracle Radio from September 17th, 2021, titled Blessed Are the Doomed. Ken shares his thoughts about sweaters, the pandemic that was raging then. And then comes a travelogue about desert nomads, which I think it might be Ken's vision for a better way to manage public lands, but I'm not sure. The ways of Ken Lane's mind can be mysterious. What do you think? I watched you
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And a beautiful thing happened this week. It was finally cool enough in the morning for a daylight walk. 55 degrees, that's Fahrenheit for our French listeners, and for the first time since early June, I went into the closet and found a pullover, whatever they call them, a shirt that goes over a shirt, not a sweater. Sweaters aren't allowed in the Mojave. whatever sweater weather might be, it has long been illegal in the desert. Because sweaters, as anybody can tell you, are the natural habitat of breeding centipedes. If you're listening to the program in the Mojave Desert on this last day of summer in the year of our eternal fury, 2021, congratulations. If you're listening on the first day of autumn, congratulations. As who was it? Somebody in the Bible said, congratulations, you people. What's that from? Anybody know? Attributed to Jesus. Translation I enjoy because it sounds extra sarcastic. Congratulations, you poor. God's domain belongs to you. Congratulations, you hungry. You will have a feast. Congratulations, you who weep now. You will laugh. Sort of like that old Traveling Wilburys song. Congratulations for breaking my heart. Congratulations for tearing it all apart. The Beatitudes, that first part, I mean. The staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It was blessed and not congratulations last time I went to church, and I'm pretty sure they've since scrapped it all together, the whole thing. If the poor and the hungry will be satisfied, well, that means a couple of billionaires will have a little bit less. Until they double it all again during the next pandemic or firestorm or earthquake. Or meteor strike. Or once in a century solar storm, which just happens to be due right about now, considering that the last major solar storm was in 1921. Exactly a century ago. The one who went to space a couple of weeks ago, I don't remember his name. Well, he lost half his fortune to a divorce because, if I recollect, a Saudi prince put some spyware on the guy's phone while they were at the table together plotting evil, one can assume, and then the online retailer guy had his marital affair revealed and half his fortune went to his ex, who I believe is doing environmental penance now, which is good. There is a lesson to remember somewhere in there about the mighty falling and whatever. Congratulations, you poor. And then there's a possibly more relevant lesson in the fact that by year one of the pandemic, he had more billions than he had before the divorce. The divorce that was ultimately the result of spyware on a phone. And according to the news this week, everybody's got that same kind of spyware on their phone now, which can turn on the camera and the mic and record everything and live transmit to headquarters. Which headquarters might matter and it might not. Either way, ransoms will be paid, as in the days of old, days that closely mirror our own, the days of the Black Death and the Hundred Years' War and the Avignon Papacy. This was the 14th century when knights formed great criminal companies dedicated to the mission of fire and fury, pillage and murder. all to get out of the house for a few months. Knights were supposed to take fellow knights as prisoners, held for ransom, and often kept in high style until the gold could be raised, generally by threat of killing somebody else in another place entirely. There's a real good history book about this era called A Distant Mirror by Barbara Tuchman. We were trying to celebrate the start of autumn, and somehow everything turned toward the Black Death. And autumn doesn't quite mean what we like it to mean in the hot, dry deserts of the Southwest. Over in Phoenix or Las Vegas, you still see people putting little booties over the paws of their miserable little dogs. Those brief walks so the dog can relieve itself in the 100-degree sadness. Where autumn colors just means the various shades of beige slopped on the three modest houses surrounding your own because the flippers are flipping. As fall arrives in its vague and unsettling way, critical fire danger, dried up rivers and lakes and aquifers, a day shorter but still a challenge to human existence, the pandemic real estate market gears up for another frantic season of counteroffers and all-cash buyers. Renters find their pandemic assistance has vanished just as a new crop of better-off people are looking to upgrade, looking to get out of the cities where the retail stores are gone and the restaurants veer wildly. Not just from the waves of official pandemic closures and rules, but from the more crucial waves of sentiment from the people themselves. Businesses may have their open now signs fluttering outside, but the grim reality of the Delta and the rebellion and the resistance has emptied out the dining rooms and movie theaters despite those signs. And everybody's righteous and screaming about it all. There is no compromise anywhere when everybody is ready to strangle anyone else for anything at all. Those pandemic hotspot maps always make me queasy, especially when I look at Appalachia, especially where my own paternal family comes from. A place where human communities have been exploited and belittled and destroyed by wave after wave of corporate evil, especially in the pharmaceuticals department. The pharma corporations targeted the poverty-plagued regions of eastern Kentucky and the Blue Ridge and etc. because if you want to market a dangerously addictive opiate painkiller, then it's best to have a lot of people who are always in pain. Physically and mentally and emotionally and especially economically. Bodies wrecked and discarded by the coal companies, wrecked at 40 years old, and told to work minimum wage at the Dollar General Family Dollar World for mere survival. You know, if I'd lost a dozen relatives to Purdue Pharma's murder pills, I might be pretty suspicious of the next miracle cure, too. If I'd watched everybody I love die at 50 years old, or earlier, as in the 14th century, I guess I'd be as reckless as the peasants who went on wild rampages through the French countryside in those post-plague years. Killing anybody who looked comfortable, anybody who claimed to have an answer for sale. Like the priest. Everybody's stupid and desperate in a real crisis. That's the truth. And if you're feeling smug about anything, really, just remember that people who should have known better were told they could avoid a respiratory virus by constantly washing their hands like some OCD raccoon. And they bought it. You probably bought it. We all bought it. We bought the hand sanitizer from the fly-by-night companies cranking out the stuff. Looked and smelled like a combination of bathtub gin and bathtub meth. And when you found out it was all a lie, a top-down lie to cover up a top-down failure to have enough medical masks on hand for a pandemic everybody knew was coming, one of these days, when we tended to shrug and then we tended to start yelling at somebody else we thought was maybe 3% dumber. Everybody's at war every day, all of the time.
Sea of barren plains, sand, and rugged mountains. A region which seldom knows rain and where few men or plants can live. All the continents have deserts, but the greatest of all is found in the United States of America. Yet in this vast, only about 3 million people live. Fewer than in some large cities of Europe, so little rain falls that only the hardiest of plants can survive. And in its heart, several years may pass between short cloud bursts. Mountain ranges where peaks rise to a height of nearly 11,000 feet. And salty plains where distant layers of heated air reflect the sky in a mirage. Barren sands may reach for hundreds of miles with dunes 500 feet high. A rolling sea of sand where desert winds blow the constantly shifting waves, where nothing green can grow, and where neither man nor animal can live for long. In modern times, man has built railways, but the trains are small, and these trains reach into the desert only a few hundred miles. Beyond the rails are roads, some of which go completely across, but such roads are poor, and in some places, piles of rock are needed to help mark the route. At emergency stations, water and gasoline are available for passing cars and cargo trucks carrying supplies to the few lonely towns of the desert. Airplanes too, are carrying passengers and cargoes swiftly over dunes and mountains, covering in hours a distance that would take many days by train or auto, and many months on foot or camel. But the one local airline reaches only a few of the main desert cities, and even they are very small, merely a few hundred houses where 4,000 or 5,000 persons may live. At such cities, there's usually a stream supplying farms and a palm grove. But still, in this barren land, wood is precious, and most houses are made of earth. The clay.
Into thy merciful hands, O infinite power, I commend my son. Thy will be done.
Don't resist, please.
I can't help it, baby. He was so young, so strong.
wrong. Why did they...
My daughter, it's not for us to question.
It's about time someone started questioning.
Where are you going, David?
To get Holderness.
Nearby, desert farm products are exchanged for goods from other areas. Dates and grains from local farms, sheep and goats from northern mountains, or metalware and clothing from Europe. Such goods are brought by the trains, trucks, and planes. Without them, the desert cities would have a much more primitive life and far less security. But away from these cities are millions of square miles of desert in which live many thousands of persons. To reach such remote areas, man must use the only beast of burden which can live well in the desert, the camel. A camel's wide, flat feet do not sink into desert sand. It can eat hay or straw, but can live equally well on desert grasses, and its nostrils can be closed against blowing sand. Though ugly, ill-tempered, and hard to train, a camel is the most valuable animal in the desert. It can travel 5 or 6 days without water, under conditions which would soon kill a horse or an ox. A camel can cover 50 miles a day with a rider or a load of 500 pounds. Camel caravans are still the only means of carrying food and supplies to distant tribes in the remote wastes of sand and mountains.
You need have no fear of enemies here, my son. You're with friends. What is your name?
The last man who asked me that tried to kill me.
Well, never mind. It doesn't matter. We judge a man here by his deeds, not by his name. Rest easy and we'll have you on your feet in no time.
I don't know how I can repay you.
Thin grasses are soon eaten, and the flock must move on, perhaps many miles, to find another pasture. Those who tend such wandering flocks are called nomads, people with no permanent homes. A small caravan of camels may carry a family of nomads and all their belongings. Here, enough grass has been found to give a few days' grazing to the lean nomad flocks. So camp is made. A nomad tent is a strange house, but an extremely practical one for the desert. The dwelling must often be moved, and this tent can be rolled up and carried on the back of a camel. The coarsely woven material helps keep out blowing desert sand, and being low and rounded, the tent offers little resistance to strong desert winds. The family's water bags are hung on a pole tripod. Coffee is ground with a brass mortar and pestle. But aside from this, the nomad's cooking equipment is limited to a few battered pots and pans and wooden bowls for mixing food. Scattered widely through the desert are springs or groups of wells. Such a water source is called an oasis. And here men can live, cultivate fields, and build a village. An oasis can become a lush garden in a desert waste, with a profusion of vegetables, grains, fruits, and flowers. In summer temperatures, which may reach 130 degrees, a palm grove may be the only shade within many miles. Dwellers have no coal, gas, or oil for fuel, but again, the palm provides. Dead leaves are carefully gathered for fires. Without the palm, this man would have difficulty finding fuel for cooking. And without a palm's logs for rafters and palm leaves for covering, his mud house would be without a roof.
Soundscapes tonight by Joshua Tree's own Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Thank you. You notice all the people in broadcast media are now constantly trying to launch lame catchphrases like the long shuffle or the big fake or the widest receiver because they aren't poets, because they aren't even wordsmiths. It never works. But they keep trying. So maybe I'll try too. Maybe the world really did end on January 1 of the year 2000 when the computers could not figure out what time it was. Maybe that's when our reality, our version of the universe, veered off into permanent chaos. The 2+ decades historians now refer to as the final freakout. As a species, and of course when we're talking about species, we can and should generalize. As a species, we are depressed, anxious, bored, gullible, confused, and weirdly proud of announcing to everybody at all times that we are enraged. That we are crying. That we are so tired of being angry all the time. Maybe try some marijuana, you know? Some sleepy time tea. Whatever's legal in your jurisdiction. Just be careful around doctors, because if you happen to mention the fact that folly and greed have created a planet of fools being led to a psychic slaughterhouse, in the name of constant entertainment and personal consumer choice, well, they will have the van waiting outside. Put her under permanent observation. She's on to us. The high school in my neighborhood made it 3 whole days before it locked down for a gun on campus. 3 days after 2 years of the schools being locked up. Maybe the school should have stayed locked up, I guess. Maybe all the buildings should remain locked up. Just leave them that way forever, like in the Omega Man. The survivors can move to the Great Plains, which, by the way, encompass much of what we consider desert today. The southern plains of West Texas, of northern New Mexico, that beautiful southeastern corner of Arizona that goes into Sonora, Mexico. Rich grasslands not so long ago. Part of our American Serengeti, too. Just needs a little cooperation from us and nature will do the rest. Take down the fences, let those miserable drought-ruined farms die with dignity, the pronghorn and the bison and the massive herds of mule deer and the majestic packs of Mexican wolves and the ever-adaptive coyotes will take it from there. Have you been to the American Prairie Reserve or any of the other prairie reserves in southern Colorado, West Texas? Bits of it remain to this day. Link it together and the big animals can move with the seasons, with the droughts, with the climate. And when you get something like 3 million acres of connected public and private land, the fences down, the rivers and streams wild and free, the roads open, just please don't crash into a bison. Well, that's Eden, a workable chunk of it anyway. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from our home base in Joshua Tree, California. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Happy autumn to you all. Why not? Why not have a happy autumn? Happier, less awful, less a cog in the wheel of 24-hour anxiety. Why not try that? Carve pumpkins, not people. Thank you for listening. And good night from the voice of the desert.